Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. Interesting. Mm. That's why you need Robert Half. Yep. I don't think that's a person. That's the company.
Okay, I was confused.
Yeah, their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI. Welcome to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing, and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. See, at Robert Half, they know talent. I wish I had had Robert Half back in the day when I was hiring.
Okay.
So, no offense, Sona.
Oh, I feel like you did mean to offend me.
Yes, you wouldn't be here if I had had Robert Half. Okay. Visit RobertHalf.com today. Sona, how's your sock drawer looking?
It's messy. There's a lot of single socks.
Yep. I think it's time for a little spring cleaning.
Oh. That's awful.
Check out Bombas. Once you try a pair, you'll never look at socks the same way again. I should know. I like my Bombas. Their spring collection has new garden party socks that bring the party to your feet. My feet have never been to a party. They've
so
got
sad.
Stripes and florals and new vintagey colored rib socks. You know, when I'm wearing Bombas, I feel like my feet are being caressed.
Oh, okay.
And cared for in a way they never have been in my life.
Hmm.
Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head over to bombas.com/Conan and use code Conan for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com/Conan and use code Conan at checkout.
Hi, my name is Jordan Peele. And I feel honored. Absolutely fucking honored.
Wow.
About being on Conan O'Brien's. Oh, no, sorry, I fucked it up.
It was going so well.
Let me just take it back.
You should change it and not say
no.
It.
Oh,
so, hi, my name is Jordan Peele. And I feel good about being Conan O'Brien.
No!
Yes!
We had it!
That's so good. You guys edit and stuff.
Not
and
that particularly.
As you were.
Walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And I'm starting with an observation here, sitting with my pals, Sona Movsesian, Matt Gourley. And this is a complete happening that we just realized as we all sat down. I am wearing uncharacteristically a green kind of hoodie, olive green sweatshirt that I never wear. And I just put it on, waltzed in. Sona, you are wearing the exact same color.
Yeah.
In like a, what is that? Like an overcoat.
It's like a trench coat.
Trench
almost.
Coat. And then over here, Gourley just walked off the set of MASH. And he's wearing, I guess, thinking the role of Radar O'Reilly. And you are wearing the exact same green.
You too.
And then I'm noticing that we're sitting on the exact same green pillows and that the chairs are the exact same color, olive drab green.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, I think if when this airs, it will just be faces floating.
Yeah, zip up your jacket. We're going to look like three floating heads.
Three floating heads just doing a podcast. Come on. I mean, of course, yes, this is an audio medium, but I know that people will look at the clips. So if you want to check out the clip of... Now, what could we do? Don't we have to...
Is anyone actually going to key us out or...
No, we don't need to.
Because we look stupid.
To.
We're,
no,
we're just
we
swaying back and forth.
No, we look smart.
No,
we
I, look know, real I worry... Hold on. I worry with that there's probably more technology needed here. That the background also has to be all green and then some kind of... Does anyone here understand the technology? Eduardo, do you understand it or does Blay understand it? What do we need to do to make our head just float?
I understand it. I mean, basically it would be... Because there's a black background, we would key out the green. So it would just be your heads on a see-through box. So we could key out the green.
Is this going to cost us like thousands of dollars?
No, not at all. I could probably do it on my phone.
Add in the background.
Yeah, I'm going to cover up.
Yeah, if you cover up your arms.
Cover up your arms and your hands.
Yeah. I can't
put them under the table.
This jacket is very small on me, so it's already up half my arm.
That jacket doesn't fit you. Did you steal that? Did you steal that jacket off a corpse? Did you steal that jacket off a corpse?
Off a corpse? No. I okay. didn't steal things from corpses.
I don't steal things from corpses. You know that what I love about Sona? She has standards. She has standards.
That's the only time she could say I didn't steal
something. If they're breathing, then I'm leaving.
Yeah, keep doing whatever that is.
Well, listen, I'm just saying we're trying to create. We don't have a big budget here, but we're creating a cool, spooky optical image of our heads.
Yeah, 3 days after Halloween. This is great.
Yeah, and okay. It'll probably air long after that.
Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
You know? For, what? No, what? I don't
Haunted
know.
Mansion? Oh. The three heads in the Haunted Mansion.
The whole, you
yeah, not
song?
All of us did time professionally in an amusement park. You act like, come on, guys, you with me? Come on, guys. Yeah. The song you hear 75,000 times a day when you work at an amusement park.
You gave it your all, too, in that performance.
But, you know what? I bare my soul for you two assholes, and this is what I get?
Well, anyway, we should probably quit doing this. It seems dumb. Yeah. What do you think? We should move on with the show?
We should, but you know what?
What?
Everybody should head over to YouTube.
Oh, for a visual treat.
Do you mean head as in pun, head over to YouTube? Because we're floating heads?
Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
I'm so angry at you right now.
Yeah, he's the worst. You are the worst.
I usually love you, but I hate you so much.
Oh, no. You guys haven't heard? I'm a little great guy.
All right. Well, anyway.
I'm saying just go to YouTube. I'm not saying to watch this. Yeah. I'm just saying go to YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, go to YouTube.
Switch away from this.
Yeah, don't listen to this. Go on YouTube right now.
Certainly there's something you would want to watch there.
Look up a great Olympic skiing fail. Do not look at any of this shit of our floating heads. All right, let's do it.
Okay. One more transition because we were all laughing. Like, okay, my next guest.
All right, everybody. Okay, enough of your giggling. Let's get to it. No screwing around today. My guest is an Academy Award-winning writer and director behind such films as Get Out, Us, and Nope. He also starred in the hit Comedy Central sketch series Key and Peele. To say I'm excited is just not adequate. I'm thrilled. I'm overjoyed. I admire this gentleman so much. So glad he's here today. Jordan Peele, welcome. Can I say something to you? I have been dying to have you on the podcast, and this is a huge delight for all of us. Wow. But I didn't
know. They, you know, sometimes offers come in and they just don't sort of penetrate the wall of, you know, of advisors.
No, I went to your house and I rang the bell.
Yeah.
And you answered. And I said, "Hey, Jordan, would you want to do the podcast someday?" And you said, and it wasn't convincing. You said, "I just had drops for glaucoma surgery and I can't see who I'm talking to." And then you did that bit every time I came by.
And the truth of the matter was, I want to say this on the record.
Mm-hmm.
This is such, it is such an honor. It's always an honor because from us comedy people, you are the GOAT.
Oh.
Do you know what that means?
I can get up hard, rocky mountains easily.
Oh,
I can digest in cans.
This one's like within the last 20 years. This one.
That is so nice of you to say. I'm going to say when I first discovered you, as a lot of people did, watching Key and Peele sketches, and I would watch these sketches and I would say, okay, these are so well written. These are such great ideas. These are such perfect sketches. I mean, some of the sketches I've spent years relating them to people. Like, you know that one? Mm-hmm. You know that one?
Yeah.
There's the burn victim who's in the insult comic.
That one. A lot of comedians really connect with this one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And there's so many great sketches, but that one, comedian going around the audience and then respectfully passes over someone who clearly has been in a horrible situation.
Burns all over them and is just, but passes over, tries to start heckling and, you know, doing crowd work with the next guy. And the guy goes, do me.
Do me. And he says, no, 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 sir, I wouldn't do anything. He says, I can take it. And you make him do it, and then he does it, and you're like, too far.
I thought I could take it, but I can't.
Yeah. I was crying when I first saw that. I've watched it multiple times, and you guys have many sketches like that, but I was like, okay, that's up there with, you know, take your favorite SCTV pieces, take your favorite, you know, your favorite sketch from SNL ever, take your favorite Monty Python. I mean, just the whole pantheon. You guys have a bunch of sketches that slide in there.
Thank you. Know, you.
God, look, I, God you know, damn I'm, it. You're amazing.
I believe Alex Rubens was the writer on that sketch as well. And we had an amazing team of writers. So if I'm wrong about that, I'm desperately mortified. But look, I...
But also the commitment, it's the ideas and then the performances. I was raised on Warner Brothers cartoons. And my sense of humor has always been very cartoonish. And when you guys would go into that cartoon world where reality bends in this beautiful way to to frustrate the expectation, I was just over the moon.
Thank you. Look, yeah. I have to bounce that right back at you. So much of this, I mean, so much of this is born from your work and your heightening, your sort of textbook, the Simpsons.
Yeah.
This, you know, and it was a type of sketch comedy that you see in the best sketches where it's just kind of an aggressive and ridiculous heightening. And Mr. Show did it. And so we were just like, okay, we have this opportunity to do this thing.
Yeah, And then I'm, you know, one of the reasons I've always, you know, I've chatted with you, we've talked, but I've always thought, okay, if I get you in this format, because I've spoken to Keegan, and I'm, well, it's like, you're here, and I'm one as I know, like, I always want to find out, where do these minds come from? At what point do you realize... I think of very strange things and I really like comedy. Or was your first true love film, or was it comedy, or both, or horror? Where does it all start?
I probably fell in love with comedy at the same time I was getting really scared by shit. And I mean scared like as a kid, like, you know, kid growing up in New York. I grew up next to a building called the Stratford Arms that was a hotel for transients, is what it said on the side. And it was basically, it was, you know, very interesting characters. Let's just put it that way. And so I had a very blessed Upper West Side, you know, upbringing. And I was, you know, was cultured and that whole privilege. But it was also, it's just like, there's a creepiness to it as well. So those two things, I think, developed side by side, but at some point they collided for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they did in film.
So you start, what are the movies that you're watching that terrify you when you're a kid?
Well, so, you know, if I'm first thing out of my gate, this is a lot of people would say, but Nightmare on Elm Street was that imagery for my specific generation that was like too young when that came out or too young. It was like, it was more seeing the posters and the thing that it just... It evoked such terror.
Yeah.
And so that was that's a formative boogeyman. But then falling in love with cinema and stuff, it's like stuff like The Shining.
I know you've referenced Rosemary's Baby. What I see in that film that I think the best directors try to harness or a similar feel is slowly turning the dial. You know, because I always loved about Rosemary's Baby, and you can relate to this because it was filmed, you know, takes place in the Dakota, Upper West Side, blocks from where you grew up. It starts out and everything's fine. And it's the slowly turning of the knob where things are less and less fine, but it's hard to identify the exact moment when things, does that ring true for you?
I love that style and I love that location. I do have this real nostalgia and connection with that. Of course, that's where John Lennon was shot.
Yeah.
And so there's all sorts of connotations, right, with that area that are so dark. But I also think that's such a big part of the horror, kind of with comedy, is the grounding character. You know, the person that ropes us in and reacts. You know, with horror, it's the toad in the pot theory, right? Mm-hmm. If you throw a toad into a boiling pot, then that person's gonna leave the scene. That character needs to get out of there,
right?
And that's you don't want that as a horror film. You got to keep them in this isolated spot, so you slowly turn up the heat. Right, the character.
The idea being the toad gets in, it's like lukewarm, kind of feels okay, and the temperature's slowly rising, things are getting more and more uncomfortable.
And you can kind of believe why the character would convince themselves, oh, well, maybe it's just me.
It's so interesting because there's like a, I haven't thought about this at all, but there are their close brothers or they're related comedy and horror. There's a similar thing going on. It's just... because you need to acclimate somebody to something that's very normal. Mm-hmm. And my favorite comedies are, let's acclimate to something very normal. And then you slowly start to bend things and twist things. Of course, you get to this insane place. Mm-hmm. But a lot of comedies that are most effective work that way. They get you to buy into a reality. And then you have to start accepting a few premises here and there along the way. But you get sort of spoon-fed them. And I think it's the same thing with... probably really good horror, or the kind of horror I respond to.
Yeah, and just like the comedy, it's like the heightening, the pushing, the fantastical, and the imagination. That becomes a certain type of project and exercise. But the exercise of grounding it is always what makes it work to me. In horror, especially, is the hardest part because. You know, how do you ground this idea that your protagonist would stay in this situation very long? It's right. Kind of always comes up. How can they not solve this? And you're putting the audience in this angst of wanting your character to solve it, but you're not giving that to them. And so the only way to make that in any way satisfying is to kind of like honor the grounded experience as much as possible.
When you did Get Out. It's very important, as you said, if someone shows up, goes away for a weekend with his girlfriend and goes to a house, meet the family, if things are fucked up right away, they're out the door. So you have all these reasons, which I can relate to, which is, no, this is okay. This is all right. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay in this. Okay, I can handle this. And then things, you can, like you say, turn up the heat on the pot. But how you do it and how gradually you do it is really important.
And that's the guess who's coming to dinner setup is one that everyone kind of like connects to, which is like that anxiety of meeting your in-laws for the first time, or your potential in-laws, and you want to crawl out of your skin and leave, but you can't. You're there for a reason. So we all...
I just left too. There's like, is it Bradley Whitford who says, "Oh man, Obama, greatest president," right?
Yeah.
And you just think, okay, this is.
I would have voted for him a third time.
But I was just thinking, like, to me, that's also a funny comedy situation too, which is this white person is way over is pushing it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, that was the. That was the element of it.
And I'm sorry I said that to you when you came in today.
Well, yeah, well, that you should.
Obama, man, right?
A little tone deaf. It was
a little tone deaf.
There's such a thing as being too colorblind. You don't.
I'm sorry. I was trying to get in good with you right away, and it was weird.
You're good. We know each other.
But then I was saying he should be a Supreme Court justice, and you said let's let it go. I like him too.
I don't need. Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't need to be cast as your judge. I don't need to be. I don't need to be president of the United States. No, but look, I mean, we're obviously joking, but it's in its essence, it's kind of a Key and Peele sketch. It's an observation of being black in white spaces. And in that time, I don't remember it having sort of been said like that. And so I remember just writing that and feeling like it was the moment I realized I had to direct the film that I was writing.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't know anybody who can do that, who can direct that scene.
And that's a big leap. Yes. Okay. You write this screenplay, obviously terrific screenplay, and you're a known quantity, writer, performer. And then you say, I'd like to direct this. What was the reaction?
You know, it was surprisingly okay.
Yeah.
This is Sean McKittrick to this guy at QC Entertainment, mm-hmm. who I was pitching to. By the way, I pitched it like no one's ever going to do this movie, but here's the pitch, mm-hmm. and pitched, you know, this crazy plot, and started writing it about a couple months into writing it. And again, I knew the whole thing, but a couple months into writing it, I realized, made this call, and he said, go for it. And it's just like a $5 million movie. So it wasn't like, you know, it was like kind of the perfect type of risk. A part of it was, we can't afford anyone else. You know what I mean? This is like micro budget.
I'll direct it and you can pay me $6.
I thought it would be more controversial, but he said yes way too quick. And I was like, well, let's negotiate. Tried to backtrack. Too late.
Wait a minute, $5 million?
Yeah. That was the budget. Now supposedly it got done for 4.5, but who knows? Right. Way Blumhouse cooks the books. No one knows.
Weirdly, I got a check for $500,000. And I don't even think it was supposed to go to me.
No,
I
probably should have.
No, I'm not affiliated in any way, but I cashed
you did
it.
Nothing. You cashed it.
Yeah, I bought a lot of cars and coats.
I signed something when I did promotion on your show.
You did. Remember when you did promotion on the show, and you thought it was just a standard, I agree to be on this
show.
That's
what it was.
Yes.
You were the inspiration for Bradley Whitford's character.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, right?
Yeah. It's just an homage.
His name in the movie is Cronin O'Ryan. Just don't hear it that often. It's really weird. You know, Scotty's cares about the environment and has strong values they stand behind. Plus, Scotty's facial tissues are super soft, strong, and absorbent, and easy on the wallet. Whether you've got allergies or just a case of the sniffles, stock up on Scotty's facial tissues so you can stop wiping your nose on your sleeve. Isn't that disgusting when people do that, Sona?
I just don't like that.
No, I don't like it either. I like to wipe my nose on your sleeve, but not my sleeve. Yeah.
Well, my sleeve is made of Scotty's tissues, so that's okay.
I wonder. That's a very cool fashion statement. Hey, and stop offering guests toilet paper to blow their nose into. That's disgusting. Hand them a Scotty's facial tissue instead. You can find Scotty's facial tissues that come in beautiful box designs. Put one in every room. Why not? Make your guest feel like a king or queen. Hmm. If someone offers me a tissue, sometimes people say to me, Conan, would you like a tissue? I say, is it Scotty's? And if it's not, I just swat it away.
Oh, okay.
Scotty's is better at what counts. For more information, visit scottysfacial.com. You know, it's incredible to have the flexibility to work in all sorts of places, whether it's taking video calls from the park or emailing large files while you're grocery shopping. Sona, this is good for you.
Is it?
Because you're always doing whatever work you do for me from fun locations.
But I like blaming it on not having reception.
I know, but you can't do that here. Working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network, which is why you should check out T-Mobile, Sona.
Okay.
Then you got no excuses. They're America's largest and fastest 5G network. With T-Mobile, you'll be covered in more places with the 5G speed you need for your life on the go. Plus, they also cover more highway miles with 5G than anybody else. Check it out if you don't believe me. Hey, Blay, you've got T-Mobile, right?
I do. I was actually just up in the woods in Idlewild. It was fantastic for the weekend, and my T-Mobile didn't miss it. My T-Mobile phone didn't miss it.
You know, I wouldn't think you'd need a cell phone because you speak so loudly into a microphone.
Well, I had to look some stuff up.
Just take it down.
I didn't know when brunch was.
I can hear him.
When the restaurant's open for brunch.
Okay.
So I used my T-Mobile coverage to check
terrific,
out brunch.
Blay. That's all right. Anyway, wherever you are, you know, take it from the loudspeaking Blay. If you're on the go, you want to be in the know, you want to make the show.
What?
T-Mobile.
Okay.
That's the one for you.
That was
I should
weird.
Have rhymed it with go. Anyway, find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today. Coverage not available in some areas. Fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data Q3 2023. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform, and one source of truth. This is unbelievable. I've been talking about this idea for years.
I know. I want you to explain it more.
I can.
Okay.
With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. I had this idea years ago. I was telling people, no one listened to me. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems. Remember when I said that?
Yeah.
Because you've got one unified business management suite.
You said that.
Yeah. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, man.
Yeah.
See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Conan, netsuite.com/Conan. I'm going to say it one more time just for emphasis, netsuite.com/Conan.
I feel like I've produced a film with you.
Let's talk about that.
Do you feel that way?
Well, you and I had an interesting, and I don't know where this is going or what you're doing with this project.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm just going to say that I got this invitation to go to your office, and I didn't know anything about what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then you had this, it was absolutely fascinating. I think it was over 2 hours, you and I. And I think you've done this with a bunch of other people,
yes.
But you just presented me with a bunch of decks of cards, and I would select different cards mm-hmm. that would lead us towards the making of a movie.
Yeah.
And so, okay, and I'd pick you'd start out with genres, and I'd pick three genres, and you and I would talk about them.
We produced it together.
And this is your life. Your life is making films. That is your life now, and you're making these films, and you think about it, and you're clearly extremely gifted at it, and this is what you've been put here to do. And then there's me, and I'm just firing all these ideas at you about how we could make this movie. It was really fun.
So I'll give you a little.
Do you think we ever got close to making a movie together that could be made? Be honest.
Yes. Our premise was solid.
Okay.
And you were a big part of that. Now, wait, can I backtrack for
just
a second?
And
because this is something that these are a bunch of sessions I've been doing with people whom I admire. The Ryan Cooglers, the Paul Thomas Andersons of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen of these, but they really are amazing at sort of like learning about how other creative people think about the filmmaking process.
Right.
The Daniels, mm-hmm. Some just incredible filmmakers, and then Conan.
Well done. You got to break it up every now and then. You know, every now and then it's like, this is this amazing French meal, vichyssoise, and, just perfectly baked, steaks and everything. And then every now and then you got to just have
new perspective.
Yeah.
Fruit loops.
Some Fruit loops.
Fruit loops with a lot of almond milk.
And so the whole thing was we ended up, it's kind of like D&D,
yes.
But making a movie.
Yeah.
And it's a fake movie. And we ended up making a Christmas movie.
Yeah, we ended up making a Christmas movie that I remember thinking at the time, I absolutely think this could be a Christmas movie.
Yeah, that's the fun
of it. I think this could be a Christmas movie. And we're not, I don't want to get too much into it because we did record it. So you never know. This could be something. I don't know what you're doing with all this. It could be a movie.
Yeah, hey,
I did,
but spoil away. I don't care.
Okay. Well, we had it was really fun. It was a lot of fun, and it was really fascinating because my thing is to just pitch, and I threw so many bad ideas at you. And my favorite part was watching the light go out of your eyes.
Yeah.
When I'd be going down a really bad road, and I'd see you go, okay. Conan, maybe, and we really had to act like we're going to pitch this in a meeting with executives. So sometimes you'd say, just don't do that whole run in the meeting with the executives.
Yeah, that's right.
That was really fun.
We had to, and you had to talk some actors off of some ledges and stuff
because
like that.
Because that's part of the game is every now and then you'd say, okay, now it's time to pick a disaster. Like there's a, kerfuffle, there's a problem. So you'd splay out other cards because there are all these different decks of cards and I'd pick one out and it would say, you know, your actor has lost his mind and run off set.
Who was the bad egg? Woody?
Woody Harrelson was causing us some problems.
Anyway, it's
which just you know, I think it's, the minute you draw the Woody Harrelson card, you know he's going to be causing problems.
Trouble.
I mean, we're shooting on location, and but I, you sent me in to deal with Woody a bunch of times.
To deal with Woody and his
issues. And then also Jen Aniston was part of our because that was one of the cards we drew.
Right.
And I was not allowed to speak to her.
Well.
That's a wise choice.
As a producer, we made some early decisions.
That was really
wise
funny.
Choice.
I remember it. I was just not allowed to.
It's very real.
You were so good. I could see why you're very good at what you did because you were very gentle with me. But you were like, Jordan.
Look, I was legitimately honored. I just knew if I could mine, you know, that gold.
Yeah.
You know, in this way, we got.
Yeah. It's like, okay, and we had, I think also Charlize Theron is in there, and you were saying like, yeah, Lala, I'll talk to them.
I'll talk to them.
Now, why don't you go talk to Woody? Woody's in the trailer. Go hang out with Woody, and I'll deal with the ladies. And I'm like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why I can't have dinner with them.
But, I mean, all, you know, just out... From the in the context of the of all of these sessions I've done, it's just I mean that one is just going to live forever for me. It's like holy shit! I just got to like movie improv with Conan. Basically,
that was fun.
It was cool.
It was really fun. We had a very good time. You know, I
sorry to kill momentum with another compliment.
That's okay. we play those. He always fast forwards them or takes them out.
I take them right out. Yeah.
It's funny because I think you asked me about the movie Halloween while we were there, and I know that this is one of your all-time favorites. Is the movie Halloween? And I remember you asked me a question about it. I'm trying to think if it was about Mike Myers on Saturday Night Live.
Mike Myers and Michael Myers and the connection between the two.
Yeah,
that probably doesn't exist. But I
just asked you about the rumor about him having a Halloween poster up in his office.
Oh, okay. I remember we mentioned Halloween at one point, so I don't remember, but
I do love Halloween.
We can clean that up. You love the movie Halloween. That is one of your favorites. And what I love is it's so specific, but I've heard you talk about there's a way that Mike Myers, there's something about his physicality and the way he kills that you find really fascinating.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing about Michael Myers is I think of him as a truly minimalist villain, which I just love that. You know, I think that's always the scariest. I mean, the master class with him, you know the story about the mask, that it was a William Shatner mask.
I've heard that.
That was painted. The prop guy just went to the store, was like, fuck, we got it could be, you know, it could be this whatever, this clown mask, or check this out, and it all clicked, and Carpenter's a genius. Mm-hmm. So... You know, what I love about that film is how Carpenter tailored this monster in all of the choices. The mask, the way he moves, the stillness, shot from across the street, and you can kind of, the Where's Waldo aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all very elegant for what's ultimately, you know, meant to be a brutal kind of killing tale. And that's kind of like, that's why I think horror is, you know, such elevated cinema when done right.
I've noticed something that I was watching the movie that came out a number of years ago, The Witch. Mm. And it's, is it Eggers who made that film? And I noticed that there was one thing that, to me, I love a movie that creates such an eerie environment. Things that aren't otherwise scary are frightening to me. So there's one shot early in The Witch, which just shows a bunch of, it's a tree line. It's just a tree line and the wind's moving through it. Mm-hmm. It's a New England tree line and the wind's moving through it and the leaves are rustling and it stays on that shot and there's the music. And I remembered feeling like the hair on the back of my neck standing up. Mm. And I thought that's, to me, I like films. I don't necessarily need blood flying everywhere constantly. I love this idea of something's amiss and otherwise normal sort of harmless looking objects or environments suddenly scare the shit out of me, and I can't tell you why.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so much is the music, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like the same moment can go so many different ways. And if the music is scary, then it'll be scary. If the music is too happy, it's even scarier. You know, it's
right.
I'm all about tone as well.
Yeah.
So what is your all time favorite if you had to do?
Wow.
Horror.
God, it's so hard because I don't know. I don't think I'm qualified to say because I don't know the genre as well.
Sure you do. Come
but
on.
I see Three Men and a Baby as a horror film.
Oh, so no.
Just, it has that ghost in the window, that famous ghost.
No, I'm always... comedy that hits me the wrong way is, to me, the ultimate horror film. You know,
right.
if there's a comedy that I feel like I didn't like that, that's more horrifying to me than anything. It's like, really, you guys were going for comedy? That's horrible!
Well, you know that ghost in the behind the curtains, mm-hmm. in that one scene of Three Men and a Baby.
Yep.
You know about that?
No, I don't. I mean, so, I know of it, but I don't know what the...
Well, so it's, you know, it turns out, you know, the whole urban legend was that there's a moment where you can see a ghost,
mm-hmm.
behind the curtain in this loft downtown at Three Men and Baby. And the reveal was that, the truth, supposedly, is that it was, you know, Ted Danson's character was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson that, if you look and look up YouTube, it's looks like a child ghost behind a thing. But I've always wanted to make a horror film where someone's being hunted by a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson. He's not in it. It's
his likeness.
Do I need his? I probably need his permission.
You probably need the permission.
But
we can get a photograph of him. But there's another movie I really liked. It Follows.
Yeah,
which
it's a masterpiece.
I thought was so terrific, and it's just this concept of someone slowly walking towards you from like 800 yards away.
Yeah.
And I watched that, and I thought, I think a zombie walking is scarier than a zombie running.
Yes, I mean, I had a scene in my film where there's a guy running towards you, so
yes.
I have a little
which
bit of
which is also very scary. I'm just saying, it depends on the situation.
Yeah.
But zombie running to me is less frightening than zombie walking. What do you say?
Meh. I mean, if you,
what
are you talking about? Something that gets to you later.
It gets to me later.
You're talking about something that gets to you later is scarier than something that gets
it
to you sooner.
It makes an appointment.
Yes, I like my zombies that call the day before,
uh-huh.
and they say it's for good. And by the way, I hope you have a ramp because I can't use stairs.
Yes. Well, to be fair, It Follows was I had seen It Follows. I think by the time I had shot Get Out,
mm-hmm.
and part of that scene where Walter is running straight
yes.
out,
yeah.
I believe if I'm not mistaken, I was thinking, well, you know, what I love about the energy of It Follows is anything in any movie that comes from the back of the house towards you
yep.
is doing the ultimate in film illusions.
Yeah.
It's the train robbery, right? A train
yes.
coming through, people will dodge out of the way.
Exactly.
And so I took what a little bit of what It Follows had done and North by Northwest
yeah.
before it
yeah.
and sped Walter at it. So kudos to that film.
Well, it's terrifying
yeah.
when he's running right at when Walter's running right at the lens, it's absolutely terrifying. I also find it scary when they're all sitting around in It Follows and a character from way far away is
yeah.
just slowly walking.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
yes, I like the idea that I have time to call an Uber.
Yeah.
There's and then debate which one is closest and
right.
wait 9 minutes.
And all that time you're watching and experience more and more fear as it gets closer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also fear about should I have gone? I don't know if I picked the right ride. Maybe I shouldn't have gone. Maybe I just should have gone comfort.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Done an Uber pool instead.
Yeah. Uber pool would have come faster,
or
but
just straight
no.
up Lyft.
I had to have comfort.
Yeah. This is not what most horror protagonists have on their minds.
Well, Again, agree to this disagree. You, I'm opening you to a new kind of horror, and I want you to, you're free to use this in any of your films where something terrifying is happening, but then the character's worried about what this is going to cost them financially.
Yeah.
And
it just feels like the horrors in your life, mm-hmm. you know, when I put out something into my movie, I'm putting real horror, something I'm really afraid of.
Right.
Like if I saw like a doppelganger
right.
or racism.
Yeah.
But you're talking about things like...
What's the right ride-sharing app?
So...
Is Amazon Prime... Is it the free delivery? Do I really need this in a day?
No,
am I
no.
willing to pay more for it?
So
if
the
it's
guy
in
Get Out really was based on you.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, I'd have voted for Obama.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I mean, really.
Yeah. We'll work on a horror premise. And...
This is why I don't get invited to any of these cool horror discussions. All right. You know what I found? I found there was a movie, I think it was The Vanishing.
The original?
The original Vanishing.
The Dutch.
I loved that,
that
movie.
Harrowing, yeah.
It's harrowing. I love moments of Let the Right One In. The original again. Yeah. They've always keep remaking these movies, but I like the originals. And I do love. I mean, things like movies like Midsommar freaked me out.
Okay, so this tells me you are in fact a horror fan, and you have very good taste. These are good movies, and The Vanishing is fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's dark stuff.
It's really dark stuff.
A dark movie in all daylight. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
It's so well lit.
I honestly didn't see that as being your cup of tea.
Oh, you know what's funny too? I love those movies. And I was talking about this with my wife the other day. I said, you never watch these movies with me. And she said, because I don't like that stuff. And she said, when we got married, I had no idea that this is. And it's something that's been growing. But I really do love these films. But no one in my house, my kids don't. Like horror as a genre, and so I have to go and watch these things alone, and then that feels creepy and sad. But so maybe I'll get you to come over.
Hey,
you can watch.
I'll bring the cards. We'll
bring
the cards.
Bring your cardboard, Ted Danson. and then, but you know, I love that sense of eeriness. Hereditary goes so crazily off the rails.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Well, yeah. Just an iconic film. I love this movie. And so scary, too. Ari's... And I don't know if you've met Ari. He did this same... I played the same game with him. And he's very, you know... He's very nice, very funny, very, you know, warm dude.
Right.
And as you would imagine... Our film just creeped into this like eerie dark place that I just, you know, I couldn't even wrangle it back. And so again, it's like he's from a horror perspective, you know, in many ways he's the champ.
Well, you know, I was gonna say, and I thought, because this is something, I mean, it's sort of what we're talking about, but just as in The Witch, I was just looking at all these trees undulating.
Yeah.
But in Nope, when you're taking what is a very friendly looking sky, it's a friendly sky, and it's not even a menacing cloud, but it becomes menacing. For me, it's all about difficulty of the dive, which is how can you take something that really is, wouldn't frighten you in any other situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have this dark thundercloud or whatever. It's this very calm, beautiful sky. And then you learn that if you stare at it in the distance, you can identify that it's different from the other. But it takes a while. And I loved all that. I love the way you just kept really slowly, but it just did notching it up and notching it up.
Thank
I love
you.
That.
Thank you. I mean, my sort of philosophy of the genre is you know, I'm confrontational with my audience, but I also want to, you know, I'm based on a comedic sensibility. So I want to get the entire audience on board.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the challenges with the genre of horror and nightmarish shit is that you're asking people to come take time out of their lives and come to a worse world. and a scarier world for a while. And so some people are just, hey, I'm in, let's go. But for most people, you kind of need a sort of special set of circumstances. And so what I found and what I love in horror movies is when the aesthetic and the vibe, and I love daytime horror where everything about the viewing experience is soothing and warm to the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what you're sort of noticing, of course, is in so many of the best movies, that births the creepiest sensibility because, you know, anything that's sort of trying to be scary through trying to be scary kind of ends up in, you know, in a Halloween store.
Yeah, it's I mean, again, we're jumping back the similarity to comedy, but my favorite comedy is there is absolutely nothing funny going on here. Mm-hmm. Nothing funny is going on here. Like, nothing funny happening here. And that was, you know, something that the Zucker brothers stumbled on, which is, no, let's just get these great straight men actors to be an airplane and let's have them. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Surely you don't think I do, and don't call me Shirley. Mm-hmm. But they say it like, I'm sorry, but your son is dead. And it's just horrifying, but they're saying this absolutely hilarious stuff, but in the same way that they did on 1970s detective shows. Mm-hmm. So when you're, nothing funny happening here is my favorite kind of comedy, and nothing scary is happening here might be my favorite kind of horror, which is not the castle and nighttime and, you know, and shrieking and howling in the night. It is something you can make, you know, ranch country that otherwise is quite beautiful, or you can take a beautiful weekend home and someone's visiting his girlfriend and make it absolutely terrifying.
Absolutely.
And to me, that's scarier.
It's the, and it is so much of the music. It's like for our interview here, for our discussion, there was a camera slowly moving around, and as you were talking, it was just more of a bum bum, dum dum, dum 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 dum. You know, you would be like, "What the fuck is Conan about to do to Jordan?" You know,
yeah.
What's about to happen?
Yeah.
And it there is so,
and lots of you talking and me just staring at you.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
that's it. Right, but to your point, you being friendly and nice, the nicer you are with that music, the scarier the scene even becomes, and the more sort of joyous. So this is the reason, like, you know, smiles are big in horror. It's that instant visual, visceral, primal contradiction of your terror, you know, is and this is part of why I find, if I can unlock the right horror engine and world, I can get more glee out of trying to tell that story than, you know, even doing sketch or any other thing. But it's not like I can just go, okay, I'm going to make a movie about, I'm just going to make my Michael Myers movie where I make a movie about some, you know, a killer with a knife and necessarily have that be fun for me.
Yeah.
That's not going to be my thing. So I'm respect, you know, that's why Carpenter is the GOAT.
Yeah.
In horror.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, my I'm going to be the looking for some way to subvert it in my own way.
Yeah. Do you miss performing? Do you miss it at all? Or is it like, nope, that was fun. Done with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it does feel like it's hard to say, I guess maybe a little bit, but it's just kind of starting. I mean, I did that run with Key and Peele, really was getting to do everything.
And that came at the end of, like, you've been out there for a while.
Yeah.
You've been doing improv, you're on Mad TV. So you had been working it for a while before people really got to know you.
Oh, as, yeah.
In
yeah,
Key and
yeah,
Peele.
Yeah. I was slinging rock in a sketch comedy form. It's on Mad TV.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, my entire sort of what was meant to be a collegiate career was dedicated to improv and sketch in Chicago and Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I know. I
you scratched that itch.
What I get to do now is just more fun.
Yeah.
It's just more fun.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, you're creating worlds, which is just, I mean, what could be
more fun.
Greater than that?
I mean, I'm, you know, to be fair and clear, it's like there's something that's possible when you have this, as you know, this privilege of working with this enormous team of people who are like, okay, I'm on board with your vision. Let's go.
Yeah.
And there's something that is just, that's just, you feel like, okay, this, it's not about me anymore. It's about this thing we've built and we're building and these things that we're going to build. It's hard to look back at all that time, especially because like 300 short films, short comedy films.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do one again, I got to do it again. And then ultimately I'm sick of watching myself. And
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you get it.
I know it is really funny.
All of these cameras on here are just on him.
Yeah.
We don't even have your mic on. This is just. We're going to later try and remember what it is you said.
Right.
I'm going to read over. We have a transcript of what you said, and I'm going to read it back.
Right. Well.
That's the creepiest idea.
Yeah.
A guy has lost his mind to that degree.
That's Alex Jones, right?
You didn't know
it, but he was...
We're working our way towards that format. Yeah. We'll get there. Don't you worry. Guys, it's a corporate move. Came from up top. I'm curious, what's it like now? You're in this position where you are getting to meet these directors, these people that made your childhood, helped form your sensibility. Do you have an easy time walking in and going, hey, how are you? Or do you get a little self-conscious around people like that?
It depends who.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a one-to-one who is, you'd think would be easy to talk to. I remember meeting Michael Mann and, you know, you always hear he's kind of gruff and, you know, who there are all kinds of stories can predate meeting somebody. And I just felt he was so kind of warm, connected, cool, and so I had no nerves talking to the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, he's a good friend of mine. I've spent a lot of time with him, and I'm still very nervous around him. So it's weird.
Yeah,
you know, because he's just that fucking cool.
He is. You get to call him PTA?
I'm like Pete. PT.
Yeah.
PTA. No. I do. I think I have called him.
Because Sandler's friends with him. He's always saying things like, hey, Coney. Calls me Coney. Hey, since SNL days. But he sticks with that. And he goes like, hey, Coney. Yeah, I just had, I'm having a sandwich with PTA. And I'm always remembering like, wait, you're... Why are you meeting the parent teacher association? I'm like, oh, I forgot I'm not cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, another
for a second?
I'm sorry. I forgot I was.
It's because you actually have lunch with the parent teacher association.
I'm disappointed when Paul Thomas Anderson shows up.
Yeah. No one says Paul Thomas Anderson anymore. Yeah. No one says that anymore. People say PTA.
Okay, well, I guess didn't get the memo. My whole life. If I ever write an autobiography, it's like I didn't get the memo.
No. By the way, he would disagree with me, by the way, on the record. I think he'd say, no, please.
Yeah.
Call me Paul. Probably.
Yeah, probably.
I'll stop speaking for him. He does a pretty good job.
Now, where are you in the midst of working on your next film? I mean, you probably can't say anything about it, but where I don't even understand how your process works. Does an idea come to you and then it just percolates for a while? How does it happen?
Yeah. I mean, this has been obviously an interesting year because the writer's strike has had me sort of in a state of listening.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of where I've needed to be. And I do feel like, you know, my next project is clear to me, and I'm psyched to that I have another film that, you know, it could be my favorite movie if I make it right.
That's awesome.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah. That's very cool.
I could be totally bullshitting you guys right now, and you guys,
I can't wait.
Yeah. I'm guessing, well, I'll be comped. You'll have to pay.
Yeah, well, Matt, we'll do it. We'll just, I'll get my, yeah. We'll,
no, they should, you want them, to, they'll pay.
Why I don't think, you just pay for us?
And no, then not go.
Because I'd like to go for free with PTA.
God, Jesus.
As my plus one.
No, no? No, that's on offer. I don't know that that's on offer.
Thank you.
Jesus.
Have you talked?
This was going so PTA? Well. This is one, I love this discussion, and then
you pushed it too far.
I pushed it too far. That's on me. I'm going to look at the tape later and go like, yeah, that's the part.
That was
that's
the moment.
That's the ruin, moment I ruined
it. Alex Jones came out.
Yeah. No, I still think we should move in that direction. There's a lot of money in that. Sir, it's a serious, crazy honor to have you here.
Hey,
and you have just, I think of all the boxes of what makes an artist someone that I really like, and you've just checked all of them. And so, damn it, at such a young age, frustrates me. I'm just very cool to have you here and to get to talk to you and to getting to hang out with you the other day and have that crazy experience where we thought of a movie, which I'm convinced is going to make $1 billion. It's the next Barbie.
Maybe that's his next project that he's not talking
about. Yeah. And I'll be conveniently cut out of it.
There was no deal. There was no agreement that there would be any actual financial.
I wouldn't need it. It would just be the joy of seeing my name above yours.
Is that what you think?
Do you know how many films I've made? Have you seen my films? Anybody?
You haven't made any.
Oh, yeah. Right. Forgot. Again, way over my skis. Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Conan. Thank you guys for having me.
So cool to have you here. And we got to do this again sometime.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I would love it.
All right.
All right, man.
And work me in a cameo somehow.
Well, hey, if you're serious.
I am serious.
So we're doing a Slender Man.
A lot of beaches out there, but only one beach is the beach.
Why did your voice change?
You heard me. Only one beach is the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Say it with me. Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach.
You didn't. That's just a phrase.
Sorry.
You don't have to say it with
me.
Okay. Myrtle Beach is 60 miles where you belong. Can you believe that? Everyone always talks about Myrtle Beach being the best beach. So much so that people refer to it as the beach.
Yeah.
The beach is where your best self comes out. Myrtle Beach has 60 miles of uninterrupted coastline and endless things to do on your trip. You love to eat, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the answer to that one. There are over 2,000 restaurants serving up fresh seafood, southern classics, and low country cuisine. Love music? Who doesn't? Live music is the soundtrack to the beach, or as I call it, the beach. There's live music every night of the week, all year round. Plan your trip to the beach at visitmyrtlebeach.com. You know, it's only a matter of time until your check engine light comes on, which could equal an expensive repair bill, and a new engine can cost up to $6,000.
Don't I know it?
But this is why you need this product I'm about to mention right now.
Okay.
CarShield. CarShield offers plans with low monthly rates that you can pay for your expensive repairs on your out-of-warranty car, truck, or SUV. It's so nice to have that protection of CarShield.
I know.
I believe. That's my belief. Some people have other beliefs, maybe religious beliefs. I think CarShield. CarShield plans provide protection on up to 5,000 major parts and systems, including items like transmission, engine, even your entertainment system. Mm. Just call CarShield and choose the mechanic to do the work. CarShield administrators will handle the rest and save you money. Look, I saw your car today. You've got a beautiful car, but you've got to haul your family around in this car. This is a vital piece of machinery for you. You need CarShield.
I do. And, you know, I don't take care of my cars very well. So CarShield, it would definitely come in.
You know, and also with their A rating from the BBB, don't ask me, CarShield is the name you can trust to save you money on covered auto repairs. Now's the time to make the smart choice to protect yourself from the sky-high auto repair bills. Visit CarShield.com/Conan. Save 20% today. Again, that's CarShield.com/Conan to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Conan to lock in your price today. Many delightful things have happened on this podcast over the last 5 years, but I maintain that my favorite audio moment, and this is really saying something because I think we've had some great audio moments, but for me personally, was recently we had Werner Herzog. Great filmmaker, director, documentarian Werner Herzog was on the show, and we're chatting with him. It was an amazing. I loved the conversation, and I think we got a lot of terrific response about it. I think you guys know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. At one point, he was talking, I think, about pop culture and how he tries to stay somewhat familiar with it. And then inadvertently, out of nowhere, he mentioned a reality show. And I think he qualified it by saying, I'm not sure this is still on any longer. But then he mentioned the reality show, and the name of the show combined with Werner Herzog's unique delivery delighted me. Mm-hmm. Didn't just delight me, but it stayed in my head for days afterwards. It's just this lozenge that just keeps on giving. It doesn't lose its power.
It was 100% the last thing I expected to come out of his mouth.
Exactly.
And he got the full title. Nobody calls it that. Everyone just calls it by the name.
Yeah, but he got the full title. He said it in his voice and then the way he says it. So Eduardo, if you would do the honors, this is Werner Herzog saying something that really makes me happy in 3, 2, 1.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
I'm sorry. It's the boo boo. Here comes honey. Again.
Yeah.
Here comes honey boo boo.
It's how does that not cure cancer, end all wars? Yeah. How does that not reduce carbon emissions worldwide immediately? Close the ozone layer.
Yeah. Maybe it will.
Yeah. I mean,
I feel seen. Because I want to say, because I think he's just on such a high pedestal.
Yep, yep.
But then there's something he and I have in common, which is shitty reality shows.
Yes.
And so we're the same person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's that. Wow. There's that. But the best part is more about the sound.
Yeah.
To me, yes, that's nice. That's nice. I get what you're saying. But to me, it's about this.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Listen to the boo boo.
I know.
Listen
it's
to
so
the
belabored
Honey Boo Boo.
In fact, Eduardo, as we talk, just pepper it in as we talk.
Whenever you like.
Don't even wait for us.
Yeah.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah, it's the boo boo. It's the.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo. Oh,
yeah, that's
very
good.
Really good.
But not as good as this.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I think. When it's my time to go, which is who knows when, but
soon.
People always talk about what is it they want. And I'm thinking, I want, to have a really good Pinot Noir. I want to eat a really good Sicilian thin crust pizza. And then I want them to start turning up the dials on various things that will take me to the next plane. And then I just want to hear this over and
here
over.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Over and over. Just
here
go.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Over and over as I leave this earth.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo. Here comes Honey Boo Boo. Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
I mean, I just want to, I think that would make me happy.
The odds of that happening in our lifetimes are just astronomical, and we got to be
here comes
it.
Honey Boo Boo.
Yes, yeah. The fact that, has he ever said that? Maybe he has, but he said it to us, and there were microphones around, and we captured
here
it.
Just comes the fact Honey Boo Boo.
We are living in a time where Werner Herzog existed and Here Comes Honey Boo Boo existed and they
You're
met.
Saying it wrong.
Oh, sorry.
Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
I want
boo-boo.
Someone to do a dance song and just have that loop.
And loop that.
Here yeah, comes yeah, yeah. Honey Boo Boo. We have really creative fans. Maybe someone can do it.
The question is there somewhere out there, is Honey Boo Boo herself going,
I watch
God.
Little Dieter
oh,
learns to fly.
God.
I watch what?
Wow.
Little Dieter learns to fly.
No.
Wow.
What?
It's your accent.
It's the accent. What is that accent?
That's Honey Boo Boo's accent.
I know,
is
but
it?
It's really funny coming from you.
Do it again. I want to see it.
I watch Little Dieter learns to fly.
Say that she also likes Grizzly Man.
I like Grizzly Man. I like Aguirre Wrath of God.
Oh, that's the best one.
Yeah.
I like Aguirre. Do that again.
I like Aguirre Wrath of God.
And then
here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Now let's do. He's announcing that she's coming with her to say her favorite movie, and then you say, and then you come in, Honey Boo Boo, and say your favorite movie, and go.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
I like a Gear A Wrath of God.
Perfect. That's really good. Do me a favor. This is what I want. I want Werner Herzog to say here that he hears footsteps. Okay. And so he says, here comes Honey Boo Boo. And then I want to hear a door open. And then I want to hear Gorley. Everybody all set? So here we go.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. I watched Aguirre, Wrath of God.
I think my door opening was okay, but then I did.
I think, yeah, that was like a monster coming.
But also, I think I was, you know what? She was, I think I had her on a pogo stick.
I think you did. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you do the foot.
Yeah, no, that's even better.
Let's try it. And let's try it again. Let's try it again.
I can't do.
Yes, you
sound
can.
Effects.
You're going to do it. Here we go.
Well, just so we have the order, it's got to go footsteps, here comes Honey Boo Boo, door opens, Aguirre, Wrath of God.
Yes, here we
footsteps
go.
Footsteps are first?
Yes, here we go. And go. Wait, what?
Fuck me.
What?
Oh, my God.
What did you do?
What was that?
Piffy Pit?
Piffy Pit?
Piffy Pit?
What was Piffy
Pit? What was
Pit?
Piffy Pit?
I say we keep it. Just do it.
Do it. Try it again. Try it again.
Pip, 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 pip.
Oh, my God.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Then the door.
I watch Aguirre, Wrath of God.
All right, let's try it one more time. I'll get it. We'll tighten it up. Sona, go.
Pip, 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 pip.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
I watched Aguirre, Wrath of God.
I think we almost got it, except what is Piffy Pissy Piff? Why is she wearing a weird slipper? It's made of like.
Well, how would you guys do the footsteps? That's a horse.
Yeah, she's coming in on a horse, or she's been shod.
What are you doing?
She's tap dancing in.
Come on, no, you guys aren't better.
Why does she heartbeat walk?
She has AFib. She has AFib, a rare form of AFib that travels down and it vibrates the IT band.
You guys are shitty. You guys know I can't do footsteps.
Yeah, except you, Piffy Piffy Piff.
Piffy Piffy Piff.
Oh, I'd love to hear her do all the sound effects on a. It was a cold night. Wishy washy, wishy washy. When the old man came, Piffy 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 Piff.
Why joke when you can get her to do it?
With his faithful horse. Let's do the faith, and his faithful horse was with him.
Clack, 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 clack.
No!
Why doesn't it speak?
Something like that. But why did you do clickety clackety?
Because I was walking and the horse was walking in.
And just then, an alien ship landed.
So stupid.
And then they made smoothies in a blender.
That was a good blender.
All right, listen, let's agree that as great as Sona was right now and as fantastic, much fun as we had, good times we had, nothing beats.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
Amen.
Mr. Herzog, you're our hero.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gorley. Produced by me, Matt Gorley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.